Obviously, my phone doesn't explode in the process.
I love it.
I'm the only one in the office who has one.
How do you pronounce your last name?
Eichle. Okay. Yeah, it's German. It's completely crazy. And, all right. So, I just got the DVDs this morning, and I apparently have seen the show before. It's one of those things where you watch, you know, I watch a lot of Animal Planet to begin with, and in the background while I'm working, but holy cow, sir. You are a marvel. First question. Our audience is generally typically American, and we're not sure how, I mean, like, whereabouts in Britain did you first start learning to, or learn to fish? And how did you go about doing so?
I suppose I was 7 or 8 years old. I lived in a small village that had a river running through the middle of the river.
Gotcha.
And I think every parent with a little boy would give them a fishing rod at some point as a way of sort of getting rid of them, but without them, you know, getting into too much trouble. And my first attempts at fishing were spectacularly unsuccessful. I remember I had one totally inappropriate rod. I mean, it was bought from a shop. You know, it was two pieces of steel, I think. And about my first cast, the top half of this just flew off into the river. And I actually came down to the river the next day with a snorkel and some fins and tried to retrieve it and failed. But I never caught any fish. And I did see it as just a very, very pointless activity, sort of getting very cold and not getting any sort of reward for that. But luckily, one of my friends at school, about the same age, his grandfather was a bit of a fly angler, so this friend of mine knew a bit about fishing, and I can't remember why, but you know, he started teaching me the rudiments and lending me some, you know, some stuff that actually worked. So I started off by catching gudgeon. I don't know if you're familiar with any of these species. Gudgeon, roach, bleak. Just not so much bleak, no. But you know, just sort of English river fish. And the river was very rural. A river called the Stour, Stour, in Suffolk. And I think I got that thing common to a lot of anglers where it's a very windy river, and you know, you're always wanting to find a new spot around the next bend, and I think I'm still, you know, on a continuation of that process. But in my early teens, I made that transition from just seeing fishing as a very random thing to being something where you can actually select larger fish. It's not just a matter of luck, and you know, the term that it used to have in the UK at that time was specimen hunting, a specimen being a good sized fish. And so I started fishing for chub and also pike, which you have here. I actually caught pike to about 15 pounds, and then I got into carp fishing. Now I know you've got carp here, and they're sort of almost regarded as a bit of a nuisance fish, and people shoot with bows and arrows and all sorts, but at that time, and we're talking about sort of 30-odd years ago now in the UK, it was seen as a very hard fish to catch. They weren't very widespread. People would hook them, they'd get broken up, and so it was a hard fish to catch. So I got into that. I was actually the youngest member of an organisation called the British Carp Study Group when I was 16 years old. But what happened then, carp fishing sort of underwent this very big transformation from being this sort of very rarefied thing where you could go along to a lake and just have the place to yourself. It got much more popular in the next few years, and it actually got to the point where you were no longer escaping from the rest of the world when you went fishing. They were there on the lakeside or the riverbank with you. I then started fishing for catfish. We got the European at that time there were a few waters in the UK that had the European catfish in. I had a season fishing for them. Then I moved to the north of England. There weren't any catfish waters there. I gave up fishing, and I just happened to come across a magazine a few years later with an article about somebody fishing for marsia in India. And that sort of planted an idea in my head, and you know, a couple of years after that, I found myself in India, no idea at all really how to, the sort of the travelling side of things, you know, it was very much trial and error. But you know, I as well as catching various diseases, I did catch some fish, and I came back and I wrote a couple of articles about the fishing, and then that led me to thinking, well, there's got to be other places in the world where there are interesting fish. So over the years, I just probably on average, every other year, I would spend 3 months, you know, going somewhere, and again some spectacular failures, a couple of trips, you know, two, three months not catching a single fish, but yeah, so a long, slow process to bring me here.
Yeah, our editor's going to attest to that. Our fishing editor just got back from Florida, and he's he had a very abysmal time,
oh, really?
To say the least.
What was he after that?
He was after, I believe, marlin.
So, oh, right.
Yeah. They got a bunch of carp and a bunch of others, but he was. We didn't get enough for a... we were trying to get a photo gallery out of it, sadly enough. But when did you realize you could turn your this passion into kind of a career for yourself?
Well, I've been writing, I suppose, now for since about 1982. So I was 1992, you know, roughly 25 years. In the early days, it was just occasional articles, and you know, very occasional, very occasional checks coming through the post. That led me into other kinds of writing, I suppose. I started off writing about, you know, my fishing trips, but I ended up sort of writing, you know, general articles. I then worked as an advertising copywriter for a while. So the writing has been gradually progressing over the years. And then what happened was I from 93, I started going to the Amazon. That's the first time I went to the Amazon, and I was after this fish called the Arapaima there, which is, you know, reputed to be the world's largest freshwater fish. And prior to that, I'd made three trips to the Congo after a fish called the Goliath tigerfish, which actually features in our season two coming up. And that possibly, it's arguable really, but that, you know, that possibly remains the sort of the freshwater holy grail. There are a lot of people want to catch it, but even just getting to the Congo, you know, just getting there is so difficult. But because I'd caught the Goliath tigerfish, I thought Arapaima should be fairly straightforward. I'll go there. That'll make a good story. Anyway, that ended up taking me 6 years to catch an Arapaima, going back every year. What surprised me was the fact that, you know, that there's actually a lot of commercial fishing in the Amazon. But when eventually I caught it, I managed to get a good photograph of it, which was seen by a TV producer in London for Carlton Television, as it was then. He managed to sell that. It took him 2.5 years, but he managed to get a series commissioned by Discovery Europe. And let me see, that was in 2002. So the, you know, so the television has been just the last few years, and just slowly, you know, quite a slow process again. I did another series in India in 2005, and then with Icon from, it was 2 years ago, wasn't it, we started, yeah.
2008. Good deal. But to say, I know I was reading saying something effective. Animal Planet was talking about it being one of the highest, you know, watched programs on the show. At least that's what.
Yeah, I think it is the highest. Yeah.
The highest. Yeah. All right, you enjoy fishing. It's also your job, obviously, at this point. How do you balance or separate your career from your passion? When most people, you know, want to get away or escape from their job, they go fishing. So,
yeah, exactly. Yes.
What else do you do?
At the moment, not a lot else at all. I mean, it sounds, you know, yes, in a lot of people's perception, I have a very exciting life, but somebody who doesn't really have time for anything outside their work is actually, in some ways, it's a bit dull. I don't, you know, I when I get the opportunity, I'd like to sort of sit and stare at the ceiling, but I actually don't get a lot of time to do that at the moment. I'm also trying to write a book at the moment, so any bit of spare time, in theory, I should be scribbling something or have the screen on. So it is a bit, it is a bit all work and no play at the moment, but having said that, you know, it is obviously the most fantastic thing to do. you know, obviously the shoots are, you know, the shoots are quite intense. You know, you've got a whole crew with you, lots of equipment, so they have to be, you know, the time scale has to be fairly compressed. And because they are about a lot more than fishing, there's a lot else that has to be filmed. So as an angler, from that point of view, I can be a bit frustrated because for one show, you know, we only need really one fish which is big enough. And then, you know, we've got all the interviews with people and all the other things we've got to do. Whereas a lot of fishing shows, you get one fish and then you get one that's a little bit bigger, and you know. So I work with some very good directors, but they tend to sort of, you know, they will pull me away from the water after after we've got the fish that we need, and then it's all the other elements. But I also used to work as a biology teacher. And yeah, what is very gratifying is working in the science, the biology, with the stories, and just the whole sort of investigation that each episode is really, and that being, tending to start with a fisherman's tale, and as fishermen know. We don't enjoy a very good sort of reputation amongst the wider public, well known for sort of just generally exaggerating and making things up, and it's the same the world over. You talk to fishermen and they tell you things, and you walk away from them thinking, well, that sounds very unlikely, but
fishy.
Very, very exactly, very very fishy. But the I suppose the theme of the series is that a lot of these stories do have a grain of truth, and in a way, two reasons for that. I mean, freshwater, which is my area of expertise. I've done a bit in the sea, but it's mainly freshwater. And I think freshwater is a much more unknown realm than the sea is, for the simple fact that the water isn't so clear. In the sea, you can drop a camera in and you can see everything that's there, and you've got all these wonderful programs about whales and reefs and you name it. But the stuff that lives in freshwater hasn't really been seen on television, and so you are revealing to people animals which look like they're extinct monsters, but actually they are swimming in a river near you, some of them. And also the other sort of biological principle, which again all fishermen are familiar with, you do get occasional freak giants because a fish's body is supported by water. If there's enough food, they can just keep on growing. Land animals, that doesn't happen. So there's a sound biological reason why you can occasionally get a giant fish. And so what we tend to do is we listen to these fishermen's stories and then investigate what could be behind them, and very often turn up something where the truth is every bit as sort of mind-blowing is the story that started it all off.
So I was just watching the Stingray episode, mm-hmm. and good lord, it's like, and I know you had talked about some of them growing to the width of about 8 feet
mm-hmm.
or so, and the fact that you immediately stumbled on a 6 foot wide that was pregnant is just
yes.
kind of blew my mind a bit. what's your all-time favorite catch?
That's a very hard call, but I think probably the Goliath tiger fish.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of reasons there. I think because it is just such an unbelievable beast. Most people know about piranhas and they get very excited about piranhas. And piranhas grow to maybe sort of 18 inches at the most, but normally they're a lot smaller than that. And this is an animal that is basically a giant piranha, and they probably grow in excess of 100 pounds. I had one when we were filming that had teeth that were about an inch long, and that's roughly about the same length as the teeth on a 1,000-pound great white shark. But this is something that lives in a river. But it's all, and you'd think that something like that people would know about it, but most people, you know, they know about piranhas, they have no idea this thing exists. And that being largely because the part of the world where it lives is very, very inaccessible. People, you know, outsiders just don't go there, well, not in their right mind anyway. And so you are seeing something which is very sort of unbelievable looking, but also something that very, well, not just people outside, actually. A lot of the people, what we found was that a lot of people who even live there have never even seen one. It's something that is very much part of their folklore. There's this fierce animal in the river that will, you know, bite people in half or bite bits out of them. But nobody's seen it up close, and most of the time you wouldn't want to. So even, you know, even the people there, it's almost like not like a real animal, but like a bit of a spirit. So it is really. I think it sort of epitomises that thing that fishing is. It is about having contact with another world, and that sums it up, I think.
What about what's your favourite lure tackle? Some of the equipment that you use that you favour.
Right. I mean, I tend to fish sort of ridiculously heavy gear, which gets, you know, it's getting scaled up all the time. You know, I used to think 40-pound line was heavy for freshwater, and then, you know, then I find myself using sort of, you know, 80-90-pound mono. You know, I now, you know, for the stingray I was using, I think 130-pound nylon. Occasionally I use 200-pound braid.
Jeez.
So, you know, a lot of it is sort of almost like marine big game gear. But I mean, what I actually enjoy, which I occasionally get a chance to use, is sort of single-handed bait casting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of like a 6-foot bait casting rod with a little multiplier reel and sort of little lures. One of our programs for season 2, we were in Alaska and I was fishing for pike with this gear, and that's very nice. It's because a lot of the fishing that I do because the tackle is, you know, the gear is so strong, it tends to be very physical. I mean, normally the weak link is going to be part of your equipment. But if you scale it up, far enough, actually the weak link is you, and you know, you're going to get pulled out of the boat or into the river or whatever. And I certainly enjoy that sort of. You know, it becomes a bit of a sort of a brutal fight in that situation. But as an antidote, a little bit of subtlety with a single-handed rod occasionally as well.
So I want to make sure this is still going. So I always get nervous with these things. It's like, I don't want anything to. Is there anywhere that you haven't been that you're planning to go, or you would actually really dream to go?
A bit of a difficult question to answer because we're sort of teeing up a few things.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know. There's obviously a limited number of fish that we can make this kind of program about because the sad fact is a lot of the rivers in the world are in a bit of a sorry state. So, you know, in a way, the programs that the situations that we're showing are sort of the exception rather than the rule. But you know, there are still a few that we've sort of got penciled in, so I can say yes to that one. But I think maybe without going into too much, there's still a few.
I understand.
I mean, I think from the angling point of view, I mean, you know, you probably know what it's like. You know, even if you've caught a particular fish or been to a particular place, you still feel that the story isn't quite over. You know, I've spent a lot of time in the Amazon. I've been there sort of over about 15 years, and I would still like to go back and catch, you know, a bigger arapaima. I would like to. Well, I'm not sure the Congo. I was going to say I'd like to go back to the Congo, but the Congo is the kind of place that you enjoy only retrospectively. It's often not a lot of fun while you're there, but the fishing is incredible. A bigger Goliath tiger fish, and again because the filming often is quite a you don't get quite as immersed as if I was travelling there on my own. Sometimes the filming, as with say Alligator Gar in Texas for season 1. I fished a few days, caught a couple of nice fish, and it's just sort of whetting my appetite. But then we've got to go make the rest of the film. And go back and catch another one. A bigger one of those would be nice.
How was your fishing experience in India? A bit different from how you actually or how the fishing is here. I know because a lot of our readers obviously have not been to Asia or elsewhere to be able to experience such. So just kind of.
I think what's interesting is that the general principles are actually the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's about reading the water. It's about talking to people there, not just fishermen, but other people as well. They might be able to tell you something, and then. You know, you've got your basic armory of techniques, but what's interesting about it is you sort of start from scratch and you try things out and some things work and some things don't and you gradually perfect it and I think you can apply that approach to fishing in the UK or fishing here and I think that's. It encourages quite an experimental approach, and I think even people who fish in the UK and who fish here who do have that experimental approach are the ones who end up being more successful instead of just sticking at a established technique.
Mm-hmm.
You need to sort of step back every so often and actually really try and think like a fish. Picture where they would be, and. Try new things, even if they seem a little bit strange, and even if they don't work, you've actually learned something.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very important.
Checking technology. In the industry, it's hard. The constant question is, how do you get the younger generation, kids, mm-hmm. interesting mm-hmm. into getting involved in the outdoors?
Yeah.
Do you have any suggestions?
Well, I mean, one thing that has really I found really gratifying is that I get quite a lot of emails, and quite a lot of those are from children or from parents of children, and it does seem to be the kind of show that all the family will watch together instead of arguing about wanting to watch the other side or whatever. And I've had some people contact me who used to fish themselves, people who now have children, but they've sort of gone back to fishing and taken their children with them, and this is not just not just boys but girls as well. They've taken and it does seem to have got quite a lot of children interested, which I think is particularly with all the attractions of computers and everything else that there is, all the indoor stuff they can do. But I think what draws them in, because these aren't specifically fishing programs. They're sort of that in a way that's almost sort of smuggled in there.
Yeah.
Here's a story about something that lives under the water. It's maybe attacking people or whatever. We need to see one of those. Right. Okay. Let's get my fishing rod. Here we go. But it becomes it's a genuine sort of sampling tool. It's the only way very often you can find out what's actually in the water. But I think children love monsters, they love dinosaurs, they love scary stories, and again, it is that thing about another sort of hidden world, but it's a world that you can, they can not just, watch a show like River Monsters, they can actually go to their local river or lake, and it's a world that they can have contact with, and a world where they can encounter mystery and make discoveries, and I think they're not sort of thinking about it in those terms, but I think that's the kind of thing that's actually going on with some of the children who watch it.
Other than the then obviously the your Goliath tiger. What other species, or what's the most memorable or exciting story you've had while you've either been filming or before that?
The one that's sort of freshest in my mind at the moment is I've just come back from South Africa, where we were fishing for bull sharks up a river, and that turned out to be. It turned out to be a very, uh, a very exciting story, not just in terms of the size of the fish, but also the whole story of why those fish were in the river, and the human story as well, how people were reacting to that. And part of that story was, I thought I'd already sort of experienced a pretty long fight with a fish in fresh water, which was actually with, and until that point it was with the stingray in Thailand, one of those, I think I can say, one of those I had on for 2 hours. And one of these bull sharks exceeded that considerably. So, and you're left not just with a mental memory there; you've got a physical memory as well. The next day, your back is just just hobbling around like an old man. So that's, like I say, that's the freshest memory. And even aside from that, that is one of the certainly one of the strongest.
Have you ever been injured at all while filming or anything, or before or after the show?
Quite a catalogue of things. when I was I did actually when we were filming the stingray. I mean, because that is very physical. I've actually ruptured my bicep. I think there was a bit of weakness there anyway, but you have two tendons at the top of your biceps. Yeah. One of those is just ripped out, and that's basically a permanent situation. I'm sort of, there's a bit of a hole there at the top of my arm. So that was one. Before filming River Monsters, the series that I did in the Amazon, we were actually doing some aerial filming from a light aircraft, and our plane crashed into the forest. And what was amazing about that was that everybody just walked away without a scratch.
Wow!
So that was there was no injury there, but it could very easily have had another ending in that particular story. The what? I've caught malaria. Caught malaria in the Congo, which was which got very bad. Got to the point where my vision was actually starting to go. Everything was just sort of white out, I'd come off the river. I was waiting for a truck, and I was just lying on a mud floor, in a hut, and people were just stepping over me and casually remarking that it looks like he might die. So, there've been various things over the years.
Good Lord.
Is there anything you tend, like, a lot of guys, they like to take their jerky and their beer, out on the boat. Obviously when you're filming, you can't be too, you can't be sitting drinking a Bud Light on camera or anything, but are there any snacks or any beverages that you like to take with you and on trips, in particular?
I'm just thinking. In my old days as a carp angler, I used to munch the bait that I'd made. People used to make all these very complex concoctions with all sorts of flavourings and very sort of very highly nutritious, expensive baits. And I used to occasionally I'd munch those just to I knew that it was all good stuff, but just to see what it tasted like and check that it actually tasted good for the fish. I tend not to do that these days, mainly because I'm using sort of dead fish a lot of the time. I'm just thinking, do I have anything that I? No, I mean I'm out in the sun a lot, so I do drink a lot of water.
Yeah.
And on my own trips, I tend to just drink. In the Amazon, I very often will just drink straight out of the river, and often it's water that where people are living alongside, so they're washing their clothes, they're gutting their fish, they are using it as a toilet, and amazingly, I think I've got a very strong constitution. I think over the years I've built up a good immune system, and I've come back after that kind of trip and sort of gone to my doctor and said, look, I must have all sorts of intestinal parasites. can you check me out? And it comes back totally. totally clean. I'll tell you what.
He's secretly drinking bleach, isn't he?
I'm just thinking what the secret there might be. One thing I do sometimes do, or have done, is just cloves of garlic. Just munch a few cloves of garlic. Obviously, that doesn't matter too much because I'm a long way from polite society. but in terms of, if you do that on an empty stomach, you can feel it really sort of working its way down. And that's meant to be very good for clearing out intestinal parasites. But again, I don't do that too much on shoots. But,
As your cameraman get angry at you. Especially during the Gar episode, or the episode where you're in Alaska, where you were trying to find out what the giant fish was, when you were among the bears,
yes,
when you were fishing for salmon, I was wondering if you have you gone salmon fishing since at all, or was that your first and only experience?
That was my first and last time, but not just because of that. I mean, it's sort of salmon fishing tends to be sort of a bit more upmarket than the fishing that I normally do. I mean, but that was very memorable.
But salmon are normally your bait fish, aren't they?
Yes. Exactly. don't tell your game fishing reader. You know, sort of yes, they are normally using for bait. You know,
I was just laughing when the bear was just kind of looking at you, looking at the bait. Yes, just kind of like, oh my, you know, it's like I've seen Grizzly Man recently, and it's just kind of All right,
yes,
good deal.
How important is it to catch a fish? You know, surely that there are some times where you just bail out.
Step away. Yes. All right, good deal. Question: can we use some of the? Can we do screenshots from the DVD at all to make a photo gallery, or is that
ask Brian? But I'm sure you can. Yeah.
Okay, because we want to put together something so we can, get these guys looking at the interview. He's apparently hiding.
Yeah, I'm sure you can.
All right, cool. All right, good deal. I think that's all we have. But yeah, it's fantastic to meet you. I'm officially hooked. Like, that DVD is going to get watched today, just in all day, so.
who are your typical, your clientele?
Our clientele, our readership?
Yeah.
Just, we focus a lot on hunting and fishing, and, you know, we post quite a few. Here's my card, by the way.
Thank you.
We tend to, I mean, we have an audience of, I want to say we get about 2.5 million hits a month or so. Thank you.
No problem.
And, you know, it's been going up month by month, so our traffic's pretty heavy, and we're actually going to be implementing a couple programs that are actually, we have a weather program being set up right now to where, you know, more anglers are going to be coming to the site to check for weather and barometric pressures and moon phases and stuff like that. So, I mean, we're constantly growing.
Nice. And when did you actually launch